Thank you, Mark. Appreciate it. Well, it's good to see everybody. It's been a few weeks since Anita and I have been here. Last week, we were down at services in Columbus and visiting the kids and the grandkids, which is always very exciting. And I think the week before that, it was up in Youngstown. So it's nice to be back here and see everybody again. Let me get my eyeballs on here so I can read my notes. It's a sign of getting old. Well, I think you all agree, and I think I can safely say that the world is maybe just a smidgen out of kelder. Would that be underplaying it a little bit? Just a smidgen out of kelder? No, we're living in turmoil. We know that. And we've been hearing messages from the church over the last months on COVID and everything that's going on. I know that we've reached out to God individually in our prayers and our personal study. And I know all of us have been trying to survive all this turmoil. And I guess not only survive it, but survive it with a positive outlook. And the knowledge we've obtained by speaking personally to God or the knowledge that the church has put forth, I know has to have had a positive impact on how we're handling this. And are we getting closer to the end times? Well, I think we can probably say just by calendar. The longer you go, the closer you are getting to the end times. I mean, could what we're seeing today, could this be a precursor of what's coming as we get close to the end times? Yeah, maybe. But all we can do at this point in time is do what we've always done, and that's to keep watch, look at what's going on around us, and most of all, ask God for discernment of what we see going on out there. Let's turn over to Jeremiah 8. And I think these verses are apropos to the times today. Jeremiah 8 and verse 15. We looked for peace, but no good came, and for a time of health, and there was trouble. I mean, does that sound like what's going on today? I think it does. I mean, we're crying out to God for knowledge and discernment. But why is that? Why does no good come? And why is there trouble? Well, just back up one verse to verse 14. Why do we sit still? Assemble yourselves and let us enter the fortified cities and let us be silent there. For the Lord our God has put us to silence and given us water of gall to drink. He's given us bitter water. Why? Because we have sinned against the Lord. And I think we can honestly say what we see going on out there, the U.S. is growing further and further away from God. You know, but we look at history, and mankind has gone through worse turmoil than what we're seeing today. I mean, through millennia this has happened. And we've talked about it many times. How often was Israel captured, taken into captivity by a foreign power? And really, quite frankly, when that happened, not knowing when they might escape or if they would escape. If you go back in ancient history, there was always conflicts in Asia. Genghis Khan. Different factions trying to gain power, trying to be in charge of everything. You know, Europe was in constant conflict. I mean, they were in conflict not only between other countries, they were in conflict within themselves with different tribes. I mean, why do you think all the castles are in England? It wasn't to be on the cover of Architectural Digest. They were there for a reason. And think of the genocide that has happened throughout history, with Hitler and Stalin and Pol Pot. Stuff we don't even want to think about that's been so horrible. So yes, there's been turmoil throughout history. And coming up to modern times in the U.S., and we've been relatively happy here, And we had the Revolutionary War, which started everything. The Civil War. Maybe not so well known, but there was the Spanish-American War. And we went into World War I. We had World War II. We had the Korean War. We had the Cold War with Russia, and we all remember that. It wasn't a conflict, but we were in constant fear and turmoil. I know when I was in grade school, we'd have the drills where you hid under your desk in case a nuclear bomb went off, as if hiding under your desk is going to make a difference if a nuke went off. But we had the Cold War. We had the Vietnam War. We had the Cuban Missile Crisis. You know, all times in our history that put us in turmoil, and quite frankly, not really knowing what the outcome would be. It was a time of fear. We know that. It was a time of uncertainty. And probably we can say it was a time of chaos and confusion. How did mankind ever get through all that? Well, if you were outside the sphere of God's knowledge, most of the world turned to philosophers. Those were the men of, and I say this tongue-in-cheek, all of it, knowledge and understanding, the intelligent ones, these philosophers. So let's take a look at a few of those famous men and see what they prescribed as the penultimate way to live your life, that you would be happy and secure and successful, and if you just followed what they had to say. And I just took a... I've listed a few of them, and before we do that, because they are philosophers, we have to look at what's the definition of philosophy. And I looked at the definition, and it starts out like this. Philosophy is a theory. Uh-oh, you always have to watch out for that word, because that's a fancy word for guess. And if we look at a theory of evolution, It's man putting forth their best guess on something. So it's a theory or a logical analysis, and I guess I would ask, whose logic are they using? So it's a theory or a logical analysis of the principles underlying conduct, thought, all knowledge, and the nature of the universe. I guess I have to say that's a pretty big scope. And all that understanding coming solely from man's knowledge. You know, no wonder it was only a theory or a guess. Man cannot comprehend and explain everything in the universe. So let's look at a few of these and see if we see a common theme. Aristotle. He was from ancient Greece. He lived from 384 to 322 BC. And here's, I'm just kind of trying to summarize what these guys felt as far as their thought pattern. Aristotle thought all knowledge is obtained from study of the physical world. So whatever you see day to day, the tree, leaves, the birds, whatever, all knowledge, that's the only way knowledge is derived, is the study of the physical world. And he said we use that knowledge for analytical discourse, or debate, I guess is another. So we use what we see out there as far as what we think and how we talk to people. So basically it's saying you decide. What I see may be different than what somebody else sees out there, but you decide what is right and wrong from your own observations. Confucius, everybody knows Confucius. He was from China, he's Chinese. He was in 551 to 497 BC. And I'll say this about Confucius, he did have a few good points. He believed in personal and government morality based on positive relationships. That's kind of general, but he believed in the morality. He believed in family bonds. He believed in respect for the elderly, and he believed in marital loyalty. But here's where he goes off base. He believed you achieved ethical harmony through skilled judgment rather than knowledge of a set of rules. Sound familiar? You make the decision on what's right and wrong based on your observations as you go through life. You make that decision. You don't live your life because of a code of conduct. Ralph Waldo Emerson, coming up more to modern times, he was from Boston, 1803 to 1882. Some of you may know a little bit about him. He was the father of transcendentalism. He was a professed naturalist, although from what I've read on him, he didn't get out in nature too much. But he was a professed naturalist. He viewed everything as nature's relationship with men. He rejected pressure imposed by society, materialism, I won't disagree with him there, and organized religion. He believed in total freedom and individualism. Basically, whatever feels good, do it. When I read that on Emerson, a song popped into my head. See if I have it here. Yeah. See if you know this song. I could while away the hours conferring with the flowers, consulting with the rain, and my head I'd be a-scratching while my thoughts are busy hatching if I only had a brain. For some reason, that popped into my head. And that's basically, hey, I'm going to confer with the flowers, and I'm going to consult with the rain, and that's how I'm going to make my decisions in life. Kind of silly, isn't it? But basically, that's what he's saying. I shouldn't have tried to sing that song, because now you're all going to be in your heads the whole time. Even further up to modern times, Jean-Paul Sartre, who was French, 1905 to 1980, he said, man is condemned to be free because there is no creator and we alone are responsible for what we do. Now, you talk about something that would make you depressed. Just reading that sentence makes me depressed, and I'm sure it did millions of other people. He said, we search to learn through experience rather than knowledge. So everything that we learn, we have to learn through experience, even if it's been done before. So if I see a high power wire laying out there with two ends exposed, the only way I'm going to know is to go up and grab both ends of that and I get laid out, rather than reading about that in a book. Now, is that silly or what? But that's what he espoused. No God, no creator. Do what you want to do, everything in your life. Don't listen to what somebody else tells you. It's through your own personal experiences. And there's many, many, many more philosophers we could cite. We don't have the time. But I think you can see a common theme here. It's self, self, self. It's up to the individual to make the decisions. And you know what? Millions of people adhered to these philosophies. And you have to, I mean, it's so blatant that it sticks out. No wonder there's so much confusion, turmoil, and chaos in the world today. You know, imagine a world where everybody does what they want just because they feel like doing it. I mean, look at something simple like traffic laws. If I go out in my car and I'm driving down the road and I'm thinking, you know what, I feel like driving on the left side of the road today. Do you think that's going to have a positive outcome? I don't think so. You come to a crossroads. Who stops? Whoever feels like it. You know, again, what's the outcome? I'm driving down a two-lane road, and I say, well, I feel like going 100 miles an hour today on a two-lane road. Problem is, there's a guy up in front of me that says, I decide I'm going to go 20 today. I don't think it would be a very positive outcome. You know, we need rules and regulations to survive as a society. Rules that are based on knowledge and experience, and hopefully working together in harmony. So in the time we have remaining, let's look at two things. I want to address two things. Does God like chaos and confusion? And what is God's philosophy? Does God like chaos and confusion? Let's start at the very, very beginning. It's a good place to start. Let's go over to Genesis 1. You know, things we learned early on in coming into the church, at least I know I did, and these first two verses really set the standard and made everything clear going forward. And it's like I say, it's amazing if you take an in-depth look at them. Genesis 1:1, in the beginning, God created the heaven and the earth. This is not germane to the topic, but the translation for God here is from Elohim, which is plural, or family is what it relates to. So we know from the very beginning it was God and Jesus Christ together doing the creating. Verse 2, the earth was. Now, what I've been taught and I think is correct is the word was should be correctly translated became. So if we read it that way, the earth became without form and void. So there was something here. Now, what happened to that something? Asteroid, Satan, we don't know. It just said, but the earth became without form and void. And form and void, as we've learned over the years, was translated from the words tohu and bohu, which correctly translated should mean waste and confusion. So what it's saying is the earth became without form and void. It was waste and confusion, and darkness was on the face of the earth, and the Spirit of God was hovering over the face of the waters. Did God leave the world in waste and confusion? Obviously not. In 6 days, he created what we see around us today. And he rested on the seventh. He put order into being. We see how everything works together in God's creation. He created physical laws. And quite frankly, if he didn't adhere to the laws, they could do harm. I mean, look at the law of gravity. If I jump off a 10-story building, law of gravity says it's not going to come out very well. So God didn't like that. Chaos and confusion, that waste and confusion. He wanted order. And he set about his creation and what we see today. Well, how about spiritual laws? How about the spiritual laws that keep order in our lives and keep out the chaos? You know, although Moses doesn't elaborate on this in the very beginning, as we read, it's obvious there was a code of conduct or laws in place. And we read about Cain and Abel preparing an offering. So that concept or that law must have been there from the very, very beginning. We know Cain killed Abel. What did Cain do? He tried to hide from God. If it was all right, he wouldn't have hidden from God. So we know that concept of murder, that law of murder, was there from the very beginning. During Noah's time, God was going to wipe out mankind from the face of the earth. Why? Because of their wickedness. How do you define wickedness if it's not a concept of doing something against what is right, against a standard or a law? So these people weren't adhering to some code of conduct, they were wicked. You know, God's law was there from the beginning. Early on here, we just don't see them biblically recorded. But God wanted mankind to live by a set of standards and not be in chaos. And as we read through the Bible, we know this was reinforced by the Ten Commandments, all the health laws, the moral laws, the priestly duties, and everything else that God outlined. And why? So mankind could live in order and not chaos. You know, you look at biblical accounts, and you can see this stands out. I mean, how did God destroy Babel? We all know how he destroyed Babel. He confused their language so they couldn't understand each other. They were in chaos. You know, Babel was full of engineers and big builders and accomplishing things. If you couldn't understand each other and couldn't, okay, this needs to go there, whatever, it's not going to work. And in time, they all scattered. So God interjected chaos because he knows chaos does not work. It creates something negative. Conversely, how did God get everyone to come together to receive the Holy Spirit on Pentecost over in Acts 2? You know, although the people were there for one accord to keep Pentecost, they spoke different languages. That would have created a lot of confusion. God didn't want that. So what did he do? He miraculously allowed them to understand each other. And look at the outcome. I mean, I don't know how many here have gone to international sites. I know Anita and I have a few. And like when I speak in Thailand, I'll speak a paragraph, and then the interpreter will interpret into Burmese or Thai, whoever is interpreting. If you've gone to some place, I think like Italy, it's a bigger site, naturally, is going to have simultaneous interpretation. But if I'm in Italy and I'm listening to a guy give a sermon in Italian, what am I going to get out of it? I'm not going to get anything out of it. So isn't that amazing that God used chaos to destroy something, and he used order to create something? Psalms 50. Psalm 50, and we'll start in verse 16. Psalm 50, 16. But to the wicked, God says, what right have you to declare my statutes or take my covenant in your mouth? Seeing that you hate instructions. Boy, does that would go against the philosophers. Seeing you hate instruction and cast my words behind you. When you see a thief, you consented with him. You have been a partaker with adulterers. You're okay with these actions. You give your mouth to evil and your tongue frames deceit. You sit and speak against your brother. You slander your own mother's son. You gossip and you slander. 21. These things you have done and I kept silent. You thought I was altogether like you, but I will reprove you and set them in order before your eyes. I'm going to sort this out. There's going to be order. 22. Now consider this, you who forget God, lest I tear you in pieces and there be none to deliver. Whoever offers praise glorifies me, and to him who orders his conduct right, I will show the salvation of God. Whoever orders his conduct right, whoever lives by my law. Not the chaos, not the confusion, but having your conduct in order. Let's turn over to 1 Corinthians 14. 26. And this is talking about order in church meetings, but I think it's appropriate, and I think you'll see why as we read through this. And we'll start in verse 26 of chapter 14. How is it then, brethren, whenever you come together, each of you has a psalm, you have a teaching, you have a tongue, you have a revelation, you have an interpretation? Hey, let all things be done for edification, for learning, for going forward, for knowledge. If anyone speaks in a tongue, let there be two, or at the most three, each in turn. Here's the key. And let one interpret. But if there is no interpreter, let him keep silent in church, and let him speak to himself and to God. If he's speaking and nobody can understand it, what good is it? If you don't have an interpreter, it's just babbling for babble's sake. He's saying, we're not going to do that. Let two or three prophets speak, and let the others judge. But if anything is revealed to another who sits by, let the first keep silent. For you can all prophesy one by one, that all may learn and all may be encouraged. And the spirit of the prophets are subject to the prophets. And here's what's important. For God is not the author of confusion, but of peace. As in all the churches of the saints, God does not want chaos. And especially in church meetings. He's saying, here's the protocol that you follow. The next few verses talk about women speaking in church. Verse 37, if anyone thinks himself to be a prophet or spiritual, let him acknowledge that the things which I write to you are the commandment of the Lord. But if anyone is ignorant, let him be ignorant. If you look at the margin, I think it explains it better. Anyone does not recognize this, he is not recognized. What he's saying is, first off, you have to recognize that I'm teaching what's the truth in the Lord. Verse 39, therefore, brethren, desire earnestly to prophesy and do not forbid to speak with tongues. Very important, 40. Let all things be done decently and in order, not in chaos and confusion. Back a couple pages to 1 Corinthians 10. Starting verse 14. Therefore, my beloved, flee from idolatry. I speak as to wise men. He's saying, I speak, hopefully, to someone that understands. Judge for yourself what I say. The cup of blessing which we bless, is it not the communion of the blood of Christ? The bread which we break, is it not the communion of the body of Christ? For we, being many, are one bread and one body, and we all partake of that one bread. We're all individuals. We all have different thought patterns and different ways that we approach things. But the commonality that holds us together is Jesus Christ and God and what they have to instruct us. That's not order and chaos. Yeah, we've got little individual things, but hopefully when we come together, there's not order and chaos. We're here as God's family, as one. So God's way is order and not chaos and confusion. So earlier we looked at the early human philosophers of our time and what they had to say about life and how we should approach it. And as we remember, according to them, it was all about me, me, me. Do whatever you want and it'll be all right. So I ask the question, what is God's philosophy? First off, God does not have a philosophy. If you remember the definition of a philosophy was a theory or a guess. I think we can safely say that God doesn't guess. His way is truth and fact. So what does God tell us to do to lead a full and satisfying life? What is his concept of that? Matthew 22. Matthew 22, let's start in verse 34. But when the Pharisees heard that he had silenced the Sadducees, they were going to try to trick him, they gathered together. Then one of them, a lawyer, watch out for that. One of them, a lawyer, asked him a question, testing him and saying, "Teacher, which is the great commandment in the law?" He wanted him to pick out what would you consider the most important. Jesus said to him, "You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, and with all your mind. This is the first and great commandment. And the second is like it. You shall love your neighbor as yourself. On these two commandments hang all the law and the prophets." God's truth, God's philosophy, if you want to put it that way, is about love. It's not about me, me, me. It's about an outpouring of our love to God for all he's done for us and to our fellow human beings, our sisters and our brothers. Everything hangs on this love. You know, for us old timers, and I think you remember, it was so simple. Mr. Armstrong used to say, he spoke about the way of get versus give. And that summarized it pretty well. We should lead our life giving, not taking. 1 John 3. First John 3:16. This is not John 3:16. This is 1 John 3:16. First John 3, verse 16. "By this we know love, because he laid down his life for us, and we also ought to lay down our lives for the brethren." 17, "But whoever has this world's goods and sees his brother in need and shuts up his heart from him, how does the love of God abide in him? My little children, let us not love in word or in tongue, but in deed and truth." Let's not just talk about it, let's do it. "And by this we know that we are of the truth." We talked about God's truth, not chaos and confusion, but his truth. And this is basically paraphrasing that. It says, God's truth is love. "And by this, if you love, by this we know that we are truth and shall assure our hearts before him." 20, "If our hearts condemn us, God is greater than our heart and knows all things. Beloved, if our heart does not condemn us, we have confidence toward God. And whatever we ask, we receive from him, because we keep his commandments and do those things that are pleasing in his sight." We show our love to God by doing what he asks us to do. And consequently, the things that he asks us to do are order and not chaos. 23, "And this is his commandment, that we should believe on the name of his Son, Jesus Christ, and love one another as he gave us commandment." We need to love our brothers and our sisters. Final verse here, 1 John. We're in 1 John, just probably the same page if it's like my Bible. 1 John 4. And we'll start in 17. 1 John 4:17. "Love has been perfected among us in this, that we may have boldness in the day of judgment, because as he is, so are we in this world. There is no fear in love, but perfect love casts out fear, because fear involves torment. He who fears has not been made perfect in love. If we have that love for God and for our fellow human beings, we shouldn't have fear. And what is most of the world living in today? It's fear, it's turmoil, it's chaos. Because they don't follow what God has to say. They don't give, they want to get. We see that a lot going on politically in our society today. So if you have that love, we can escape that fear. We can escape that turmoil and that chaos that sometimes enters our lives. Verse 19, we love him because he first loved us. And I spoke on this before. If you the NU translation omits the word him, and if you read it like that, it says, we love because he first loved us. You know, we're created in God's image, not only physically, but hopefully emotionally, spiritually. Love is the biggest part of that. God loved us. That is in our being, or should be in our being. And we love because he first loved us. Yes, God gave us a set of rules and regulations to live by. Even the Pharisees and the Sadducees lived by these rules. We know that. But Jesus Christ came not to do away with the law, we know that, but to make a new covenant, to make it a matter of the heart. To have those laws in our heart that if we love, that's part of it. You know, if we truly love God and our fellow human beings, the law is going to automatically fall into place. If we love somebody, we're not going to steal from them or murder them. If we love God, we're going to do what he wants us to do. It's all framed in love. So as we go about our lives in these troubling times, remember God's truth that we live our life in order, not in chaos. We live our life in peace and in order. And love, not self-enrichment. We live our lives in order and in love. Love and order that has existed forever.